Welcome to the Permatemp Corporation. A presentation of the audio podcast, This Is Actually Happening. Episode 10. What if you quit your job and lived on garbage?
I was working as a veterinary technician. That's pretty much been my main occupation, my main job. 7 years I was devoted to veterinary technician. I don't know, I just got tired of working. I gotta say, like, within the past 3 years, I've had a much better experience at life than I have when I was paying rent and paying bills and living in a house and worrying about jobs and all this. You know, it's pretty liberating just saying, fuck it. I bought a camper van that's got the stove, the fridge, and all that. So that's kind of my home right now. I'm a climber, and that's kind of what's taken me on this little journey for the past couple years. At the beginning of this little trip, I was going to the grocery stores and spending money all over the place, and it was just such a big finance. Pretty much, if you go through a drive-thru, it's like they got that whole customer's always right sort of thing, right? So if you go through a drive-thru and just more or less say, hey, yeah, I had a remake order from about so many weeks ago. My name's blah, blah, blah. The manager said that they wrote it in the book, and I'm just here to receive my remake. And usually, I mean, of course, the name's not written in the book, but, you know, who's to say that the manager didn't forget? So pretty much, that's like a 95% success rate. So yeah, we did that for the longest time. After the years progressed, you know, I got out of the fast food diet, which is probably much better for humanity in general. And yeah, I was in Bishop, California. A friend of mine turned me on to the whole dumpster diving scene and just took me down behind the supermarkets down there just after they closed down and just jumped the fence to the dumpsters. And I remember the first night we went, there was, you know, the milk crates? There was about 6 milk crates full of orange juice and eggs that were not outdated. Then there was racks of ribs in there that were still frozen. And so, yeah, pretty much after that, you know, it really just opened my eyes. It's like, man, you know, why am I going to spend $10 on like a T-bone steak when I can probably go and get it for free after they close? I was really concerned as to, you know, this stuff has been sitting out, you know, it's garbage, blah, blah, blah. It's not being sold for reasons, you know, and I'm putting it in my body, you know, am I going to get sick from this and whatever? Nothing, you know, I've never had any, I mean, not even as far as diarrhea, you know, it's ridiculous. Just, it's regular food. It's just good food for absolutely nothing. After about 2 or so weeks, I just became used to it. So I ride down to like Safeway and Trader Joe's and all these places after they close, fill up my backpack full of whatever I can find, take it back to the house and just sort through it all. I think 2 days ago I was down at Trader Joe's and there was a garbage bag full of raspberries. I now actually have about 40 mason jars full of raspberry jam. So I mean, I'm set for jelly for months on end now. I got some swordfish steaks in the freezer, plenty of eggs, plenty of noodles. I mean, it's really just ridiculous with the amount of stuff that gets thrown away nowadays. In theory, it is trespassing, getting into their dumpsters and all that. I've been caught in a few dumpsters, like in, say, the Trader Joe's dumpster. Last week, I was in there just like scurrying around, and I heard some noise coming to the dumpster, and I hid, and of course somebody came in, they found me, and they were just like, oh, you're looking for food? I'm like, yeah. And so they just started handing me garbage bags, like, there's still good stuff in here, and here, and here. So they were, I don't know if that person, I mean, seriously, that person does not speak for the company, but that person did not have any problems with just handing me whatever. You know, I got some apples, I got some bananas, and I got some potatoes 2 days ago from the dumpster. But, you know, it's one of those things that fruit and veg isn't constant. and I don't want to get scurvy, so I'm always buying oranges and grapefruits and all this stuff. So yeah, every now and then I'll spend money, but you know, it's still only like maybe at most $10 a week that I spend on groceries, as opposed to $100 a week that I was spending when I had a house. Certain cities are great for dumpster diving. But then, you know, say like up in Humboldt, I was up in Arcata a couple months ago and I tried to go and do it there, but the homeless community is like probably 20% of the community out there in Arcata. So they hardly throw stuff away. And if they do, a lot of the places have compactors that go into the building as opposed to just going through the outside. So they really discourage people like going through their property and getting food. It's funny that I'm about to say it, but I mean, I guess there is dumpster diving etiquette. Like, you know, keep it clean, keep it good, keep it to where the owners aren't gonna lock it up every night. And when I go, I take only what I can use, you know? So I grab what I want, and then if I come across stuff that's still good, you know, just set it off to the side. So if anybody decides to come and hop the fence and get in the dumpster later, they can see, oh, there's food right there. Tonight's a good night for it. I've hopped into several gates and just seen steaks sitting there. Like, somebody was like, oh, I can't take all this meat, so I'll just leave some right here. Little unwritten rules in the community, I guess. There's really no obligations other than what I want. There was a few issues while I was up in Northern California. I blew my motor up. That became an issue because I had cops like banging on the windows like at 5:30 in the morning, giving me tickets for sleeping in the van. Fair enough. That's how it goes. There's a lot of homeless people out there, and I was pretty much on the side of the road for about 4 months. I guess living as a nomad, it's frustrating and rewarding all at the same time, because the low points are much lower than having a house. Like, for instance, having $1,000 and having to do an engine swap on the van, that was a hassle and a half. But then, you know, the high points are just, they blow everything else out of the water. They make it so worth it. You know, I go down to Bishop, California. Bishop is a big climbing spot, very, very famous spot in America. And you know, you just go, set up your tent, and just camp there for absolutely free. Wake up in the morning, make yourself some breakfast. There's fresh running glacier-fed water right there. It's just living the dream, more or less. During those low points, there are those spots where I'm like, man, maybe it would be nice to have a house again. But then I really think about it, and it's like, I don't really know if I'd want to commit myself to living in this place and paying rent here for a year, or getting a job here and commit myself to being in the spot. I think last year, I probably made it through last year off of about $7,000 or $8,000. And you know, when I was working, I was averaging about $22,000 to $25,000 a year, and I was just barely making it. I was just barely making ends meet. And now, like with this lifestyle that I'm doing now, $7,000 to $8,000, I'm set. I cross the border between Canada and America almost every summer, and it's always a hassle because, you know, I don't make shit for money. I, like, especially now with my lifestyle, definitely less than $10,000 a year. And at the border, they really don't want you to come across unless you're going to be spending money. And so they always have the power to ask you to get a bank statement. Like, if they want to see how much money you have, then they can, and they'll make you go get a bank statement before you can get in. I decided to go travel around Australia, and I don't have a working visa. I've just got a traveler's visa, which is good for 12 months in 3 month increments. So which means every 3 months I have to leave the country, which is awesome because, you know, with New Zealand and Fiji just right there, it's like, oh darn, I have to go to Fiji for a week. On one of my visa runs, I decided to go to New Zealand, just world renowned for climbing. And so that was my thing. I'm like, okay, well, New Zealand's right there, so I'm gonna go make my visa run to New Zealand and go climb for a week. The ticket I got, I was scheduled to leave January 1st, and New Year's in Australia, in Sydney, is kind of a big deal, I guess. I partied quite hard that evening. Probably went to, my flight left Sydney International Airport at 8 o'clock in the morning. I didn't even get back to my apartment to wash up and get ready to go until like six. I was still drunk by the time I got to the airport. I don't even think I changed clothes. On the plane, I was drinking just to nurse my hangover and everything. And so when it comes time to go through immigration there, once I land in New Zealand and I'm going through immigration, and I guess they looked at me because I probably looked like I do now, not very presentable, kind of like a dirt bag. They didn't like it too much. They were like, no, okay, well, you look like shit. You smell like alcohol. We don't want you in our country, more or less. So yeah, instead of stamping my passport, letting me into New Zealand for the week, they sent me to a detaining cell, revoked my visa, and I got to sit in a detaining cell in the airport for 3 days while they found me a flight back to Australia. There was nobody else in there. I'm all by myself. Actually, I was all by myself for two of the days, and then two other people came in. I was like, finally, you know, this is good. I can talk to somebody. But there were two Japanese kids that didn't speak any English, so great. Even though I'm not a criminal, I still can't have my stuff. It was just a big cell with, there were no beds or cots or anything. It was just a big series of benches wrapping around the whole thing. There was a table in the middle. There was a cooking magazine in there. And that was it. I read every single word in that cooking magazine like 20 times. And it was just like, yeah, this is ridiculous. Like after, yeah, the magazine was done. I couldn't even look at the cover after like 6 hours. Like, man, this is ridiculous. Like, scratching my name into the wall with my fingernails, pretty much. That wasn't even after a day. That was, like, within 24 hours. I'm going crazy in there. Like, the mind is a powerful thing, definitely. I started to go a little bit crazy, but I guess that's how it goes. So they ended up getting me a flight back to Sydney. And, I wasn't charged with anything. I just got my visa revoked. They didn't let me into the country, but I wasn't a criminal in any aspect. And instead of just letting me out of the cell, giving me my ticket and saying, you're at gate 13, go get on the plane, they handcuffed me and escorted me onto the plane with two armed guards. They're holding the plane, nobody's boarding. I'm walking through the airport, hands behind my back in handcuffs. And well, with two armed guards on either side of me, escorting me onto the plane with all the people on the flight, just looking at me like, oh my God, we're getting on a flight with this guy. Like, what's going on? It's like, yeah, great, wonderful. But you know, it worked out for the best. I got three seats to myself, pretty much, because I remember I got sat on the plane, everybody starts boarding. This lady's coming down the aisle, she sees me, she's looking at her ticket, she looks at me, she looks at the numbers on the aisle, then she finds a stewardess, is like, I don't want to sit there. So yeah, I had my own nice private, like, relaxation period on the flight back. It was kind of stressful though, because I know that for my visa, technically I didn't make it into any other country. So I wasn't really sure if they were going to let me back into Australia. I had a girlfriend over there at that point, and she was waiting on my return, and I was like, you know, I'm gonna get to immigration, and they might deport me. But yeah, no worries, they didn't give a shit. Sure, you were hanging out in limbo, you technically weren't anywhere, but whatever, welcome back. 3 days on the calendar, like probably about 2 months through my head, because yeah, that was definitely torture. I've always kind of lived my life, I mean, granted, you know, I've done my fair share of stuff that probably wasn't necessarily the greatest decisions in the world, but I have a conscience, you know, I try to live a good life, and to, yeah, just be sitting there in a cell and just be treated like a criminal, it was just kind of like, man, I'm a bad person. So yeah, lesson learned with that, never tell the truth at border crossings. I'm sure one day once I find myself in uber amounts of money, then yeah, sure, maybe I'll buy a property here or there or whatever, but at this point I'm just completely set and completely fine. Screw work, I'm gonna go climb and go dive in a dumpster.